commercial,
this paid
commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Blueprint for Wealth, a program dedicated to securing your personal dreams of wealth and freedom. Now, here's your host, Wayne Zell.
Good morning and welcome to Blueprint for Wealth. I'm Wayne Zell, and you've joined me for a very fast half hour of special topics and special guests that hopefully will help you realize your special dreams of wealth and freedom. It's brought to you by Odin Feldman and Pittleman, a full-service law firm located in Reston, Virginia, serving the D.C. metro area with clients all across the country. If you'd like to make an appointment with one of the attorneys at OFP, please do so by calling 703-218-2100. If you'd like to learn more about the firm, visit us on the web at OFPlaw.com. And also, I invite you to subscribe to my blog, Blueprint for Wealth, at www.blueprintforwealth.org, where you can receive articles, updates on estate planning, tax, business planning, videos, and also all of our prior radio shows are archived there. So we'd love for you to visit the blog and subscribe to it so that you'll get updates as they become available. And lastly, I invite you to subscribe to the Washington Business Journal, which allows me to write a column every month entitled Blueprint for Wealth. Now, today we're going to talk about nine what I would refer to as little-known strategies that may legally help you save thousands of dollars in taxes. The rich are there to make all the money and pay none of the taxes. The middle classes are there to do all the work and pay all the taxes. The poor are there to scare the daylights out of the middle class so they'll keep working and paying the taxes. And that was by George Carlin, the late George Carlin. Of course, income taxes are the single largest expense you'll encounter in life, bigger than your home, bigger than the cost of getting your kids through college, believe it or not. Income taxes are the prevalent barrier to real financial security. You can never build any real wealth without first getting your tax life under control. You may have heard the expression Tax Freedom Day, the day that we stop working for the government and begin working for ourselves, and it keeps getting later and later. And with expected increases in the tax rates and changes in our tax system occurring at the end of 2012, we expect Tax Freedom Day to occur even later than before. My experience in working with thousands of families and businesses across the D.C. metro area indicates that most of you could substantially reduce the amount of income taxes you pay simply by adopting a sound tax reduction plan. There are legitimate legal ways to lessen your tax burdens, which frees more of your money to be used for whatever you want it to be used for instead of what the government wants it to use it for. The sad fact is that the IRS will never tell you about a tax deduction you didn't claim. Discovering legitimate tax deductions is up to you. Every strategy that I will tell you about will reduce your taxes honestly, legitimately, and with the full approval and blessings of the IRS, provided that you meet the rules. As you listen to me today, you may recognize some tax savings that you failed to claim when filing your prior tax returns. Don't worry, you can go back, amend those prior returns, and claim a tax refund. Amended tax returns must be filed within 3 years from the date that you filed your original return, or 2 years from the date that you paid the tax, whichever is later. Our tax system is really complex, and the laws are always changing. I mean, the tax code itself has over 1,300,000 words in it. Albert Einstein was quoted as saying the hardest thing in the world to understand is the income tax. So if it's hard for Einstein to understand, I can only imagine how difficult it is for the rest of us. There are two principles, though, that I want to make sure that you keep in the back of your head when we're talking about these strategies. One, make money you spend tax deductible as you spend it. And two, use the power of qualified retirement plans and legitimate investment tax shelters. Now, the last caveat is Tax strategies are legitimate. Tax loopholes or tax cheating are not. So this is not tax avoidance or tax evasion. These are legitimate deductions and benefits that you are entitled to under the existing Internal Revenue Code. Number one, deduct your job-related automobile expenses and charitable mileage. When you use your auto at your employer's request to run a job assignment and your employer does not reimburse you, you can deduct 55.5 cents a mile in 2012. If you're reimbursed at less than that rate, you can deduct the difference. If you have a second job, the mileage between the two jobs also is deductible. Two methods are acceptable for deducting automobile mileage expense. The first and the easiest is using the standard mileage deduction, multiplying your miles for business times the 55.5 cent per mile rate. The other is actual expenses, which are harder to track but may yield better benefits. The automobile mileage deduction is taken on Form 2106 for employees. In reviewing returns that I have seen others prepare themselves in the past, I've come across many people who've overlooked this deduction. The IRS is not going to tell you about it, the fact that you didn't claim it. I'm telling you about it, and you may need to look at how you can claim it on your return. There are limitations that apply to this. The 2% of adjusted gross income limitation, as well as new limitations that may come in effect next year. But it's worth running the calculation to see whether or not it sticks. Strategy number two, deduct your job-related education expenses. You can deduct the cost of qualifying education. It has to at least meet two tests. One, it's required by your employer or by law for you to keep your present salary, status, or job. It must serve a bona fide business purpose of your employer. Two, the education has to maintain or improve your skill in your present work, but it cannot qualify you for a new trade or business. So if you're going to law school at night, which may qualify you to become a lawyer, that may not be deductible as a qualifying educational expense. Strategy number three, deduct your home-based office when it's being used for your employer. Now, people who work for companies whose headquarters or branches are not located where you're located, or outside salespeople who often use their home as a base for their activities, can often use these deductions. Even employees who do administrative paperwork in addition to their regular duties that require an outside office can use their expenses as a deduction. There are rules, once again, that have to be followed. The office in your home has to be your primary office, meaning you can't have another office at your employer's regular business location. Also, your office must be used to meet with customers, vendors, or patients. And it has to be in an area of your home that is set aside regularly and exclusively for the home office purpose. Strategy number four, take deductions for capital losses. If you've got capital gains on your investments, you can take any capital losses against those gains and pay no tax on your positive investment returns. Even if you have no capital gains, you can still take up to $3,000 of capital loss against your ordinary income in any year. For instance, money that you get from an investment that is simply a return of your original principal doesn't qualify as a capital gain. Also, dividends are not capital gains, so that they can be offset against capital losses. But if you invested $1,000 into something and you can only sell it for $100, and you sell it for $100, that's a $900 capital loss that you could otherwise claim on your tax return. The next strategy, fund your retirement plans as much as possible. There are many ways to reduce your tax liability by setting aside money for retirement and planning wisely for the transfer of your estate. Investing in tax shelters can pay off handsomely in the long run. Within certain limits, you can deduct contributions that you and your spouse make to an IRA account. And if you qualify for a Roth IRA, you can save even more money. Roth IRAs have the significant advantage of when you pull the money out, it's not taxable, but there are certain income limitations to qualify. After your income goes beyond a certain threshold, there are other tax shelters you can use for retirement. You can contribute to a 401k program. You can take advantage of defined benefit and defined contribution programs. In any of these cases, if the employer offers it and you can participate, it's worthy of your consideration. Strategy number six, gifting assets to your kids. You can gradually take money out of your estate by giving it away. If your estate is larger than the normal exclusion amount, which this year is $5.12 million, but drops to $1 million at the end of this year, you can reduce its value by giving away $13,000 per year to each of your kids, grandkids, or anyone else that you want to without paying federal gift tax. Your spouse can gift money as well. For very financially affluent individuals, these gifts are an excellent way to help with educational needs of grandchildren or to pass their legacy without undue taxes. On top of this $13,000 a year, you can make a tuition payment directly to a grandchild's school, and it's not even counted towards the exclusion, annual, lifetime, or otherwise. Similarly, you can make a medical payment directly to the doctor or the hospital without it being counted towards your annual or lifetime exclusions from the gift tax. Strategy number seven, how about writing off a child's summer camp? Day camp costs are eligible for the child care tax credit and employer-sponsored flexible spending arrangements. Many working parents who send their kids to day camp this past summer can count on the tax code to help subsidize the cost. For children under the age of 13, the cost of day camp is eligible for the child and dependent care tax credit. It's limited in amount, so make sure you consult with your tax advisor. Strategy number eight, choose an aggressive and knowledgeable tax preparer to help you prepare your returns. And strategy number nine, as I mentioned earlier, if you didn't claim the benefit before, file an amended tax return if you're still within the statute of limitations. If you'd like to know more about income tax, estate tax, and gift tax planning strategies, give us a call at OF&P at 703-218-2100. I'm Wayne Zell, and you're listening to Blueprint for Wealth. And visit us on the web at blueprintforwealth.org.
You're listening to Blueprint for Wealth with Wayne Zell. Learn how to better prepare for your future when Blueprint for Wealth returns in just a few moments.
A Legal Minute with Wayne Zell.
How does a potential plaintiff find out whether you've got enough money to make you an attractive lawsuit target? Thanks to the Internet, a lawyer can find out everything he or she needs to know. It's well understood that Internet search technology allows virtually unlimited access to your most sensitive personal and financial info. Detailed information describing real estate and business interests, the name of your bank and accounts, brokerage firm, your transaction history, all can be accessed and assembled without your knowledge or permission. Now anyone can find out what you have and how much you're worth. It's very different from the way it used to be, where there were scraps of paper and courthouses that had to be investigated and visited. All that has changed. An investigator can now sit in the comfort of his or her office with a computer, a modem, and a cup of coffee in one hand, and in minutes access everything he or she wants to know about you. Be careful about your personal information, and be careful about what you put on the web.
Welcome back to Blueprint for Wealth, a program dedicated to securing your personal dreams of wealth and freedom. If you have questions for Wayne, you can email him at radio@ofplaw.com or call him 703-218-2100. Now back to your host, Wayne Zell.
Welcome back to Blueprint for Wealth. I'm Wayne Zell, and with me today is my special repeat guest, David Wexler of Greenberg Wexler and I. Welcome, David. Welcome to the show again.
Thank you. I'm delighted.
I'm delighted to have you. And David is he's a man for all seasons. He's a Renaissance man, but he has been involved in the life insurance business for many, many years, decades, if not, I don't want to date him. But he's extremely knowledgeable when it comes to life insurance products. And he has, you know, in addition to being a CLU, Certified Life Underwriter, and a CHFC, Chartered Financial Consultant, he's also a technical authority on the use of life insurance and succession planning, executive benefits, and wealth transfer funding. We're going to talk a little bit about that today. He's also served as an expert witness and guest lecturer at the GW School of Law. Truly, you know, one of the premier life insurance advisors in the Washington, D.C. area and around the country. And Greenberg Wexler and Eig is an insurance brokerage and benefits consulting firm located in Bethesda. I've worked with them for many years with many of my clients. Tell me about the current estate planning environment, David. What's going on today?
Well, as many of you are probably aware, or maybe not, there was a patch that was put in December of 2010, which was part of a deal that the president and the vice president negotiated with the members of Senate, which had created a circumstance which in recent history is sort of unprecedented. For example, they increased the exemption equivalent from $3.5 million, where it was in 2009, to $5 million, which, and in addition to that, they unified the gift, estate, and generation skipping transfer taxes. Whereas before, there was only $1 million generation skipping transfer tax and gift tax exemption. No, actually, it was a gift tax exemption. The generation skipping was higher than that.
That's right.
But the estate tax was much higher than that. So now you have this unbelievable opportunity to transfer wealth if you have the wherewithal to do so, because for the first time in recent history, all three transfer taxes, the gift, estate, and generation skipping transfer tax, are all of the same.
Right. And the maximum that a couple can give this year is even higher than $10 million. It's $10,240,000.
Right. I forgot about inflation.
That's right. So they inflated it for 2012. So that's good.
And then, and then portability is a part of that.
Portability meaning the surviving spouse.
If you don't do any planning and you were to die while this law is in effect, if you don't use the exemption, it will extend over to the surviving spouse so that you could use $10 million at the second death, whereas before you had to do a specialized kind of planning, which if you didn't use the exemption, you lost it.
But the portability provision expires on December the 31st.
As do the rest of these provisions.
Right.
So you have this limited window of opportunity to take advantage of this.
Do you think Congress is going to do anything about it?
Yeah, I've given up trying to predict what Congress is going to do. I mean,
Everybody asks me that question.
Yeah, so. I would. At the time that all this was going on, I was the president of the D.C. Estate Planning Council, and I had to write an article, and I would frequently write, you know, the unthinkable is going to happen. It could very, very well be that the estate tax law will revert to the way it was in 2001, and all of the planning that people had done would have been for naught. For example, the language in this legislation says the law will revert as if it never existed,
right,
which is sort of inconceivable, but that this is Washington at work.
Yeah, and Washington at work could create major havoc for many of our clients.
Right.
If you are advising a high net worth individual who has the wherewithal to make a large gift in 2012, what would you advise them?
Well, we've sort of broken down the world into sort of three levels of wealth. There is the extremely high net worth who could give away large sums of money either in cash investments or business interests or hard assets and never miss it.
Right.
And in which case, you know, it would be a circumstance of, well, why wouldn't you do this? I mean, because this sort of opportunity is unprecedented.
Right.
And then at the next level of wealth are people who have the wherewithal to do this but are looking at their financial circumstances and saying, look, you know, I could do this, but I really feel more comfortable if I control this because, you know, all things being equal, I may need that money. I mean, investments aren't going anywhere. My net worth has sort of been flat for the last few years. And if the market was a little more robust and I could grow it back, then I might be inclined to do it. But, I might need this money. And then there's a third level of wealth where giving away this money would probably not be a good idea from a financial security standpoint, but they still are going to have some state estate tax exposure. Now, if you happen to live in Virginia where there's currently no estate tax, that's not an issue. But in Maryland and the District of Columbia, there is a state estate tax, and the exemption is only $1 million.
Per person,
right? Per person. So a lot of people don't focus on this, and the tax rate is at about 16%.
At the high end, that's right.
At the high end. So if you do the typical sort of planning that's been done historically, which is a bypass trust where you leave your exemption equivalent in that bypass trust. That could trigger estate tax, and not many people are aware of this, and that could be in the hundreds of thousands of dollars.
So what are the types of strategies that we can advise our clients to use to minimize this transfer tax exposure, whether it's this year or next or Maryland or D.C. or whatever?
Well, one is a strategy that I think has sort of made a resurgence, and it's called a SLAT. Now, SLAT stands for Spousal Lifetime Access Trust.
Okay.
Now, a very popular planning technique for financing the either federal or state tax is to create this instrument called an irrevocable life insurance trust.
Right.
And an irrevocable life insurance trust is an empty receptacle. And you can make gifts or sell assets to this trust. And by doing that, you populate the trust with resources. And then the trustee can use this to acquire life insurance. Now, the good thing about this is the life insurance proceeds are not includable in your taxable estate or your spouse's taxable estate. And if you set it up so that it qualifies for the generation skipping transfer tax exemption, it won't be included in your children's estate either.
Or grandchildren.
I mean, you can defer the tax on this for a very long period.
It sounds too good to be true.
Well, this is, again, your government at work. This is the province of creative attorneys like Wayne Zell, who are master draftsmen who can plan and create wealth for generations to come.
Oh, I love this this mutual admiration society that's going on right here. How does a SLAT work?
Well,
tell us how the Spousal Lifetime Access Trust works.
Well, when you create an irrevocable trust, the bad thing – well, let me step back a minute. The bad thing about irrevocable trusts is that they are irrevocable.
Right.
Once you set them up, you can't change them.
You're not supposed to.
You're not supposed to.
Right.
So when you create the trust, you're going to name a succession of beneficiaries, one of which can be your spouse. And your spouse can have access to income and principal from this trust as they may need it. And if they don't deplete it, it will then go on to your children and then maybe onto their children.
Okay.
So if I give it away, I can't use it. The trustee can't turn around and say, well, you know, David needs the money now. I think I'll just write him a check. Bad idea, because that will taint the trust and now everything that's in there will come back into your estate.
Right.
But if my spouse is a beneficiary of this trust, the trustee is duty bound to provide for her support during her life. So if I transfer $5 million to a trust for the benefit of my spouse and then my children, the trustee can then make distributions to my spouse for as long as she lives. So that means that she can have access to it. And because my wife usually likes me and will take me on trips with her from time to time, then you can have access to these resources, which you can then use for her benefit, which means you might be able to use it for your joint benefit. So while the trustee can't make a distribution to the grantor of the trust, they can make a distribution to the grantor's spouse and their children for their health, education, maintenance, support, and other needs as they may come due. So it's sort of a way of having your cake and being able to eat it too, because the spouse can, as a beneficiary, have access to the resources if they want them.
Now, I know one of the things that one of the arguments that have come up against these, or where people have tried to attack them, is where, you know, the spouse legally may have a support obligation in some states. I know that if we draft the trust properly, though, mm-hmm. even though we're giving assets to the spouse for her needs, mm-hmm. it doesn't necessarily mean that she has to support the grantor, the person, you know, who made the original gift, right?
Right. I mean, this is more of your province. I mean, this is really a drafting issue. And what I will tell you is these are not simple documents. I mean, you really need competent counsel in order to do this, particularly if each spouse is going to do one of these things. So we see the application of these in a couple of different areas. One is for the wealthy who want to be able to have access to these assets if they need it, or in the case where somebody wants to buy a large amount of life insurance that's going to accrue significant value, and they may want to access this value for retirement or other needs, either through policy withdrawals or loans.
Loans, right.
So, I mean, heretofore, the thought would be, well, once it's gone, it's gone. I can never get access to it. It's only there for the death benefit. It's there to help finance an estate tax liability. No one has ever given any thought to the idea that, well, maybe I can access the values of these policies for the benefit of the spouse. And again, as you mentioned, not to discharge a support obligation,
right,
but because in consideration of other resources, and if there aren't sufficient other resources, then you can make the distribution in order to support the spouse.
So is there a downside? What are the downside risks of using a SLAT?
Well, there are a couple of downside risks. One is if you need to do this for people, if you're going to do two trusts that have a strong marriage, because if the marriage falls apart and the money is gone, all of a sudden, oops, maybe I'm not going to start taking support with them, or it can become a piece of contention as part of the divorce negotiation.
Right, because it's irrevocable. You
right.
cannot unwind it.
Right, exactly. That's one downside. The other downside is that if you're going to do this for two spouses, and again, this is your province, you want to be careful of something called the reciprocal trust doctrine, which means the trusts, if you do these for two people, cannot be exactly alike.
And right. they
can, you know, and there are various steps that you can take and various drafting points that you can make in the documents will differentiate them enough so that you don't have the reciprocal.
So as an example of how the trusts might differ, give us a couple of examples that you've seen.
Well, you could have one trust that would be for the benefit of children, another spouse that would be for the benefit of grandchildren. You
right.
could have different standards as to the way they would be distributed.
Right.
I think timing is very important. You wouldn't want to necessarily have both trusts dated exactly the same day. You might want to put one trust in and then six months later do another trust, so it doesn't look and feel like we came up with a strategy that was going to put these trusts in identically.
And the risk of the reciprocal trust doctrine is if the IRS comes in and audits this thing, they're going to say, hey, wait a second, these are identical. You're discharging the support obligations of each other. They should all be included in your estate.
Exactly.
And so, that's the risk. And
right.
it's a significant downside risk. So David's suggestions are really good ones. You want to make the trusts look different enough so that you cannot attack them under this reciprocal trust doctrine.
Right. And another risk that people don't think about is what happens when one of the – if you do two trusts, what happens if one of them dies?
Right.
I mean, because the whole purpose of this is giving the beneficiary access to resources in the trust.
That are already there.
That are already there. But right. if one of them dies, half of that – let's say – let me give you an example. Let's
yeah.
say I've got two people. They're worth $20 million. We take – $10,240,000, and we put $5,120,000 in
each trust. Okay.
Right. And so hopefully the remaining $10 million will be enough to support these two people for as long as they live. But if they need to get access to it, you've got another $10 million pool of money that you could potentially have access to as long as both of you are alive. If one of you die, then half of that pool could go away.
Right.
Because no longer would the surviving spouse be a beneficiary because all that's left is their trust.
So who should set this up?
Well, anybody who has a high enough net worth that they would be valuable for them for generational planning for their children and grandchildren to set this up, but not so wealthy that they wouldn't want to have access to the funds. And life insurance can be very important in this because it can protect the surviving spouse in terms of the premature death and losing access to the assets.
Correct. We're talking with David Wexler of Greenberg Wexler and Eig. David, how do people get in touch with you to learn more about SLATs and other life insurance products?
My telephone number is 301-656-0660. My email address is dwexler@gwellc.com. And you can read about us on the web at www.gwellc.com.
Thanks for being a special guest once again.
Thank you for having me. This was a pleasure.
Tune in next week for another special topic and special guest. Until then, have a great week.
You've been listening to Wayne Zell and Blueprint for Wealth. Wayne will be back next Saturday morning at 10 with your Blueprint for Wealth, right here on 1500 AM Federal News Radio.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTOPFM HD2 Washington. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and